Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Ask Kathleen. It is Sunday night, October 21st, and I cannot believe how fast the time is flying. How fast the time is flying! It is almost Christmas. I hope you're having a great evening, a great start to your new week. This is Kathleen Williams, your host, and I am excited to be joined tonight by political strategist Jerome Esprit of EspritNet News, and we have a treat for you this evening. We're just going to come in and talk a little bit about what's going on the political front with President Barack Obama and Mitt Romney in the upcoming presidential election. And before we go there, I just want to make a couple of announcements and remind you about a few things that are coming up. One being, of course, International Men's Day coming up on November 19th, 2012. As you remember, I am the regional coordinator for New York State for International Men's Day. I've enjoyed this title for, this is the third year. And this year coming up, we're going to be doing something really exciting in the state of New York. We're going to be looking back at some of the previous award winners of International Men's Day. We're going to have them right here on ACN, that's Ask Kathleen Network, and have them talking to you about what it was like to be honored and what International Men's Day means and what's this great big movement now around the world featuring and bigging up men, as they say in my home country, bigging up men. So that look forward to that. We'll be sending out information about it, but we'll have a lot of these gentlemen right here on Ask Kathleen. Some incredible guys have been honored at International Men's Day. So want you to look forward to that. And, of course, we'll be doing some phenomenal looks at, taking some phenomenal peeks at the presidential election going into it. And Jerome and I have talked a lot about doing a after the debate show, so maybe we'll be able to pull that together for this coming Monday. And, of course, if you are not already aware, every Monday afternoon at 2 p.m., you can join in to the wildly popular Black on Black Crime, and that is with Jerome Esprit and Finesse right here on ACN. It's an incredible show, incredibly popular, so make sure you call in on Monday afternoon at 2 p.m. to 909-265-9189 or join in online in the chat room and hear this great show, Black on Black Crime. If you don't know about it, now you know, so you can tune right in. So without further ado, we're going to be here with you for a short time this evening, just talking a little bit about what's going on the political front. So I will introduce you now to some, present to others, none other than our own Jerome Esprit. Hey, Jerome.
Hey, Kathleen. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I'm well.
You always have to get your applause. Well,
it's almost
applause.
Like I'm traveling with my own band.
That's right. So thanks for joining in. And oops, there we go.
Oh, I'll get a bigger one.
You get a bigger applause. So thanks so much for being so open to just like at the last minute, let's talk about the debate and jumping right in here. Yeah, in here with me. I appreciate that since we didn't have an opportunity to do it after the second debate. But I wanted to just, you know, review real quick, like what happened in the last debate, what's going on right now, like what's really happening on the political front and what we have to look forward to tomorrow night with the president, you know, and just see what are people looking forward to. Folks are tuning into these debates, Rome, with like in record numbers. Huh? I mean, you know, it's amazing to see how many folks are tuning in to watch whether or not, you know, one is going to beat up on the other. And so, you know, tell me, what do you think? What do you look for when you're looking at these debates, if anything?
I think those numbers are more reflective of our kind of American Idol type of society. I don't think those are voters. I think those are people who are looking for something sensational to happen, and then they tune out very quickly. So our political system, it was bound to come to this, but I think a part of it is the sensationalism of entertainment. And so everybody expects it to be that type of entertainment. So I think that's where those high numbers come from, where people are saying, hey, you know what, there's going to be a bloodbath, and so this guy is going to look like a jerk and this and that. I think it's the fanfare. But when they start talking about policies, I think people just tune out. They zone out for that stuff. They're just waiting for somebody to land a blow.
So they're not even really looking for an opportunity to glean something from this debate that either should make me change my vote or will help me decide who to vote for. Because I know, you know, at Hofstra last week, I was actually a little perturbed, if that's the right word. Probably it was stronger than that, that I wasn't personally invited to be front row and center at Hofstra, which is, you know, literally down the street from me. And I'm like, excuse me, but why am I not on that list? But what I was told, besides the folks who were students and were able to get tickets, or people who worked there and were able to get tickets, that they were looking more for those people who were undecided to have them in the audience. And then, of course, they spent a lot of time vetting those folks and vetting the questions that would be asked and so forth. But if I'm undecided, that's not going to help me make a decision? Or is that's what the intent is, no?
Right. Well, I think that they're going about that incorrectly. You don't have an audience full of undecided people. I mean, just having more confusion doesn't add on to solidifying a race or not making you confused. So when you listen to this conventional, or I shouldn't say it's conventional, it's the new way that people elect to run campaigns, to say we're going to have an audience full of undecideds and we only want to hear from them is silly, because most people aren't really undecided by now, because if you really are engaged in politics, who you're a natural voter, nobody is undecided right now. You're either leaning one way or the other, so there are some things that you want to know, but undecided is a very loose term to who you're going to vote for. And just traditionally how voting goes is nobody really tells you until they get into a booth anyway.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying too. For somebody who is going in, and if you're out there right now, call us and let us know how, you know, what it is that has you in the undecided mode. 909-265-9189 if you want to jump in on this conversation. But the idea that somebody at this stage of the game is still undecided, they don't know who to vote for, something that we've been looking forward to for, of course, the last 4 years. These two gentlemen have been, okay, first we watched all the Republican debates with all the Republican candidates. Then we got to get a really good idea about Mitt Romney and a lot of the other Republican candidates as we went along. And now that he became the Republican nominee, pretty much we know what's going on with him, you know. So, and of course, you've had an opportunity to watch the president for the last 4 years in office, as well as hearing from him during the last campaign. So, what happened for me is, okay, did I like what he said he was going to do when he was running for office last time? Yeah, definitely. We saw the majority of the world seemed to like what he said. Did he do what he said he was going to do when he got into office, so that I can say not only did I like what he said, but he did what he said? Yeah, he did what he said. So what were you going to vote for? You know, so okay, Mitt Romney. So if I didn't like what he said, if I didn't like what the president said, so okay, I'm looking for another candidate already anyway. I looked at all the Republicans; they all fell out by the wayside. Now I'm left with Mitt Romney. Do I like what he's saying? Yeah, I like it better than the president. Okay, you're going to vote for Mitt Romney. If I don't like it better than the president, then my other option is the president. I don't get it.
Right. Yeah, I don't even know where to go with that. I don't get it. I'm with you with the not getting it.
I don't get it. So anyway, but if you are out there and you're undecided, if you could help us understand, you know, let me know. But political strategist Mr. Esprit, I'm looking to you for help on this one because I'm totally confused.
Okay, so we want to talk about why people are confused about who they should and should not vote for.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I don't think people are confused. I don't think that that's the case. I think that you always have people who are independent who are not going to tell you anyway. And so everybody likes to play their hands out to the last card. And so you're always going to have undecided in presidential races like you're going to have in any race, whether it's the student council president. You're going to have people undecided until they get ready to vote. You should ask the question a little differently of which way are you leaning and what does this person need to show you, because everybody pretty much has these, you know, very big differences when it comes to policy on social issues, when it comes to policy about government, when it comes to policy about foreign affairs. There are light and day. Like, there is not too many places that you can say where they're both, you know, the same, or they're just two different sides of the same coin, or whatever term you'd want to use. They're not even close to being the same. So mm-hmm. What is the debate? The debate is who wants to commit to one or the other before they see it play out. And so you're pretty, I don't want to call names, but you're pretty, like, crazy anyway if you're waiting to see who's going to win first before you pick. Like, that's not really a good way to go. So
you mean who's
going to
win the debate?
Well, you know, not just the debate, but just generally. Because the debates are nothing. Like, the debates are a part of the sideshow, right? Mm-hmm. So the debates are two people putting up their policies right in front of each other, opposed to saying that you don't know what their policies are from not paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not even a low-information voter watching a debate. Low-information voters don't watch debates. Political hacks watch debates. You know, and
what's a political hack? Is that like the pundits and the folks on TV?
Yes.
Or what?
The people who want to translate to you what they see and how they believe it turned out and tell you what other people think.
Mm-hmm.
The pundit kind of analyst, social critic people watch mm-hmm. debates. Even professionals like me as a strategist, I don't watch debates.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I only watch what the fallout debates have, but I don't really watch the debate per se, because if you watch the debate, you're focused on one side or the other. You're focused on the guy you don't like or the guy you do like, and they both don't share the same space. And so every time the guy you do like says something, you say, cool. And every time the guy, even if you say something you do like and you don't like them, you're going to go, that guy's lying. Like, so you can make any mental excuse for how you see debates turning out to work in your favor and how you're feeling in your inside of your own house. So
right.
That's always a big deal of how you see how people work debates.
Yeah, and let me ask you if you think this is an exception, because it seemed like with the first debate, the first of these three debates between President Obama and Governor Romney, that the criticism was of the president, and that was by people who were supporting him as well as the people who weren't supporting him and they're supporting Governor Romney had a field day with that. They were like, yeah, he bombed.
Right.
Up. You know, and they just kind of went in for the jugular, or attempted to move in for the jugular. And a lot of the Democrats and even the liberal media, if you will, were upset or talked about the fact that, you know, they say the president didn't do very well in debate number one. And I know we have, you know, you and I have talked about this quite a bit, to say, you know, what was really going on with him during that first debate. But that was one time where I saw people you know, even though their guy, you know, they got to see their guy, but they were criticizing, harshly criticizing their guy.
Mhm. Yeah, I mean that happens, and you know, it's always the problem with, I shouldn't say the problem. It is the stark contrast between Republicans and Democrats. Like Republicans, you know, as much as you can have a guy lie on to you, Mitt Romney has done that as a candidate. I mean, but he's been blatant, very blatant about changing his position and just lying, saying one thing and then saying, I didn't say that, and then seeing the tape of him saying it and saying, that's not what I meant. The guy's changed positions, and so he's very in your face about don't listen to what I say. Understand what I was, the spirit of what I was thinking when I said it. Like, you can speak and twist words all you want to, but Republicans will ignore that. Now, Democrats, on the other hand, will have a field day if you change one iota of any position. So if you said, you know what, we're going to set a timeline, and then you set a timeline, a Democrat will say, I thought the timeline should have been sooner. Like, they will critique, even if you did what you said you were going to do, they'll say you didn't do it fast enough for them. Like, they will critique even you telling or what do you call it, when you telegraph what you're doing. If you tell a Democrat something that you're doing, they're going to want you to do extra.
Uh-huh,
and so,
uh-huh.
You know, it's two very, very polar opposite parties when it comes down to it. And so the weight is not the same. So, for example, if the president yelled at Mitt Romney like Mitt Romney talked to the president on the first debate, the president would lose more voters than he lost by not saying anything.
Yes.
Because Democrats don't like that. They don't like yelling, where Republicans get energized by them fighting.
Okay, so you're going to help me on this one. Who was it? He was the president of the Democratic Committee last year. Dean? What was his name?
Yeah, Howard Dean.
Howard Dean. Now, we all remember, or most of us would remember, and you'll help me describe that moment, where he was one of the front runners for the office of the president in a campaign. And you know, it's been a while now. So, what, two elections ago, I want to say. And he got on television and was way, way, way too excited and animated in a particular moment. And they caught him in that, and that was the end of his, you know, prominent political career, were definitely as far as being a front runner for the office. They're like, oh, no, we can't have that guy in the Oval Office.
Right.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, he was like,
yeah.
Like, he yells up on stage. And they were like, wait a minute. Like, okay. You know, you can't be a cheerleader and run this country. Like, it was really, it was a really, I can't even say it was a bad move. It was a reaction by him that people just did not like. So they
and
wouldn't
was,
even take him serious after that.
They wouldn't even take him serious after
that. It wasn't that he had to drop out. It's just that nobody would take him serious.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So
as much as people say the president should show more emotion and be more compassionate, people don't want that.
They do not.
No.
They
nope.
do not.
I have done campaigns before where I have a really funny one. White female was running for office, and the black people in the Republican Party was telling her to wear a hat and gloves when you go to a black church.
Oh, my.
And so they asked me about it, and I thought it was hilarious. And said, well, they're telling me that I should wear this and be respectful and go to a black church with hat and gloves. She says, you know, luckily she had a sense of humor, but she goes, I didn't really feel like I was in Dixie. Like, it was kind of like a stereotype. If you go to mock black people, do you think the other black people there are not going to laugh at you?
Mm.
Just because the black people who invited you said it was okay?
Mm. There's one more. one more that I thought was interesting as well, as far as showing too much emotion, and the jury is still out as far as I was concerned as to whether or not this was emotion. But if you recall, and I know you recall, of course, but for those of you who are listening, if you recall the moment that the administration was in the war room the night that they Navy SEALs were taking down bin Laden. Remember that famous picture?
Mm-hmm.
And the president was sitting there looking at the screen, and Hillary Clinton was next to him, and mm-hmm. she had her hand over her mouth looking at the screen, and
yeah.
everybody was challenging her. They're like, oh, wait a minute, she can't handle it. Look at that. Look at the woman. You know, she's holding her face, and, you know, she looks so upset and blah, blah. She's like, I was sneezing. That's what she said.
Right.
She's like, I had to sneeze. But it was just that whole, you know, when people are looking at you in a position of leadership, they don't want to see you crying, you know, unless, of course, you know, it's death or something like that.
No, they don't want to see you do it even then.
They don't, yeah. I remember the president, did he have, I think his eye got a little wet the night that his grandmother died, didn't I think?
Yeah.
I think we saw
think
a little
was,
bit of that.
He was pretty upset, but he actually did a really good job of maintaining his composure.
He
even
sure
though
did.
He did that while he was talking, he kept it moving.
He sure did. He really
you know, he
did.
He didn't wipe his face. Nobody
no.
even pays attention till the day because they don't really remember it, because he never made any sweeping justice to the fact that he was being emotional during that time. You
yeah.
can see it on the close-ups, but you couldn't see it because he didn't make any gestures to wipe his face.
Yeah. Even the First Lady, you know, because there were plenty of times where I could imagine that a tear might fall. And during her speech at the Democratic Convention this year, you know, I thought I was hearing a little quiver in her voice. But I know that they're very well trained, and that's one of the things that we don't want to see. So for people to come out and say, you know, bringing this back full circle, that they wanted to see the president, you know, go blow to blow with Governor Romney in that debate, you know, I'm like, did you really want that?
Well, they may have wanted it. The problem is that there are a lot of people who actually vote who will not stand it. You know,
mm-hmm.
that was the whole thing about saying, you know what, I don't want to see that out of debates. People just mm-hmm. really don't want to see the discontent part. They want to know what your plan is. So if you read the transcripts of the first debate, you would think totally different of that debate, because what the president said and what he laid out was pretty concise and on point. But people remember the optics of how it looked visually, and they think that's going to have something to do with voting. But it's
mm-hmm.
your substance that has to do with voting, and your optics have something to do with your popularity.
Mm. Excellent point. Excellent point. And, you know, glad to hear that. And the other thing I wanted to I've been saying out loud, whether in my living room or what have you, is that this is not so out of character to me with regards to how the president showed up in 2008. It just is not that out of character to me, because I remember the complaints about him then during those debates when he was debating. Absolutely. Even whether both he was debating with Hillary Clinton or it was John McCain. And you know, well, he was involved in a lot more last time because of the fact that he was, you know, he had to be chosen as the nominee. But that was the same complaint. You know, he should be more vocal. He should be more aggressive. He should be more, you know, at their throats and so forth. Oh, he's so smart. My goodness, he's blowing it. He's not doing this, that, and the other. And I'm like, I never agreed with that. Really, I never really agreed with that, but for sure, this time, in this first debate, it just reminded me, this is who this man is. This says nothing about his intelligence or his character, except that, you know, we've known him as the cool president. We've known him as that, so why all of a sudden are you expecting him to be something different?
Right, but at the same time, it's not good. It's not good strategy either. Like, he has to adhere to why he's in the race and what the bigger picture is. And I guarantee you again that he's going to look like the hero. They're going to say, man, you know what, he was right, and look at all the stuff that he did right. And nobody will remember all of this criticism that he's getting. Nobody's going to remember that. But, you know, the people like me, of course, remember, because in doing campaigns, you always remember ups and downs of campaigns. So it doesn't rattle you at all. It's just the people who kind of watch this kind of casually always treat it like it's a football game. You know, at the second quarter of the game, it's like I'm leaving because they're never going to make it, and then they win at the last second. You'll go, I can't believe I missed such a good game. Well, it had to be close for it to be a good game.
You are absolutely right, but I'll tell you how many times I have walked away from the Knicks. I'm just saying.
I'm not going to say anything about that. You know what? And because I do the same thing with sports. I walk away from basketball games all the time. It's like, I am not watching this. And then you come back with 2 minutes left. You're like, wait, what? How did they get back in this thing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And not really wanting to go too far off topic, but the Williams sisters have done it to me numerous times.
I thought they were
going to give me a heart attack.
I was going to say, you know what? I can't even bash them, but yes. I would rather for them just to blow people out. And you know what this reminds me of, though, and this is still kind of related to the president, is that remember when Mike Tyson first started with his heavyweight and he was – people would have these big parties, right? And he would knock them out before they even opened a bag of chips.
Oh, like, yes.
And so everybody complained that the fights wasn't lasting long enough. Remember that?
Yes. Yes,
but
I do remember,
like,
especially having paid for it.
Right. You paid $39.95 for about 2 minutes of a fight, and so everybody wants a refund. And it's like either A, you got to handle the onslaught with the dragged-out fights. That's why they had about 9 undercards early on, because Mike was knocking about too early.
Uh-huh.
So you have to always think back and say, you know, you can't complain on both ends to say that it's too much of a blowout and the guy is not doing what he should be doing. That's just people normally complaining. So with the president, and especially with this polling stuff, this polling stuff is crazy because it's so flawed that it's giving the impression of a really, really close race, which I think is good for the president, but not good for the people who are panicking, saying the president needs to knock this out and whoever wins this debate is going to win the election. That is not remotely true.
And you know what? I love your theory on this, and I want to definitely visit that. So, we're going to take a real quick break and come right back, because I really want you to explain that theory. It's really brilliant, and people need to understand that. So that I want, you know, everybody listening, hang in there. We'll be right back in just like a couple minutes. And I also want to talk about this early voting, because I think if nothing else, the best thing that we can do is to let people know that they can go vote tomorrow if they want to.
Right.
So we're going to take a real quick break, everybody, and we will be back in just a moment. Stay tuned. You're listening to Ask Kathleen on ACN, and I'm your host, Kathleen Williams, and we're here tonight with Jerome Esprit, political strategist extraordinaire. We will be back. We will be back in just a moment. Or where you are. So let's move.
Well, here we go. We're getting set to get underway.
Let's stretch in the grass.
Great play.
Let's play tag.
What a play.
Let's jump up and down.
Oh, what a way to finish it.
And most of all, let's eat better so that we have the energy we need to play an hour a day every day.
Everyone can play. Just go to letsmove.gov to learn more.
The 99th came eyeball to eyeball in air-to-air combat with the German Luftwaffe.
Bombers would be here. We'd be above the bombers to provide sort of a net against the German planes coming down.
We said we'd better get a real name and identification so that the bombers and the Germans would know when we were on a mission. And it was decided jointly that we would paint the tails red, and we became known as the Red Tails.
Up, a short word that's a tall order. Stand up, get up, step up. Up demands that you rise to the challenge, up your game, up the ante. And if you stumble, you get back up. Then raise yourself higher than before. It's not easy, and not everyone is up to it. That is, up to up. But we are. Because we're in the business of up. Every day, Delta flies a quarter of a million people to 330 destinations worldwide, while investing billions of dollars, improving everything from booking to baggage claim. We're raising the bar on flying. You could say we're upping up. And tomorrow, we will up it yet again.
Look at these pictures. Okay, your hair was so beautiful last night. What did you do?
I stopped using heat. So I set my hair with wraps that move. It makes my hair look so rich. And then I finished with glossy polisher so I don't frizz on the dance floor. And I'm good to go.
It's still looking good today.
Well, we all look good.
Yeah. Ladies, we had a blast.
Yeah.
Organic Root Stimulator, nature's secret to healthier styled hair.
When you buy a car, what are you really buying? A shiny coat of paint? A list of features? What about the strength of the steel? The integrity of its design? Or how it responds in extreme situations? The deeper you look, the more you see the real differences. And the more you understand what it means to own a Mercedes-Benz. The C-Class. The engineering of Mercedes-Benz. Starting at $33,600.
Welcome back to Ask Kathleen. You're here. You're here.
No,
we
I'm
are
here.
Here.
I thought you were talking to me. We're here.
We are here with political strategist Jerome Esprit, and I'm your host, of course, Kathleen Williams, and we're here on ACN talking about what the president needs now. So, Jerome, let's go right back into this because you were talking about why the closeness of the race might be is better for the president than a really big spread.
Well, I think the closeness is better because it stops the rhetoric, right? If you remember 3 weeks ago when the polls were really, really spread, that people were starting to get sidetracked with personality, races, race-baiting things more blatantly. So their issues with the president that was kind of based on what he's going to do to you as a country and this and that, opposed to being a hopeful one. So once the polls appeared to be tightening, the Republicans started focusing on being hopeful for their candidate, and they stopped such of the petty dart throwing at the president. So they're trying to rally their base by not angering everybody to hate. They tried to kind of rally them on behalf of their candidate. So the reason that this is good for all of us is because, and especially for the president, is because his margin, nobody's really cutting into his margin with this with actual voters. They're cutting into the discontent that is showing in our American Idol top of pop culture polls that's going on right now. You know, who you're feeling good about, who you're feeling bad about. So one of the things that the crazy, and I want to say alleged racist Chuck Todd, because I notice he has some, I think he has kind of race issues anyway, is that
Chuck
he said
Todd?
One
yeah.
of the, yes. But one of the things that he said was, you know, the likability of the president is still the same, and the people think that the economy is doing better, but Romney's numbers are getting closer, which means people are just not liking the president. That's the first time I ever heard somebody say something so stupid. And that guy is so stupid.
I missed that one. I didn't hear him say that.
No, I heard him say it. So, you know, the issue is that for him to say that, to actually make it so personal, is more of an issue with him than it has to do with the voters. the reason that those polls are his assessment, he hasn't been in this as long as I have, but the reason that those polls are his assessment of why the polls are getting closer is based on the people who he's around. So the people who are around, who's around, have a personal hatred with the president. So he's reflecting that by saying it's personal. It has nothing to do with policies because we can't find that in the polling. So just from him saying that, he's reflecting his own personal thoughts. Then he's doing this assessment on why the polls are shifting. The polls are shifting because the criteria or the measures that they're using for polling after the, you know, going the last 30 days has to do with a more likely voter model than it has to do with overall voters. So if you only vote in the presidential elections, the last one, you're not a likely voter. But you got to remember, they had a lot of new people register in the last presidential election. So you're not getting counted because you're not a likely voter. You only voted at one time. So they're all out of the model.
But they haven't polled me now. I'm a likely voter.
Right. So, but they're not polling you anyway, because when they start doing their national polls, they're doing that in a they're testing kind of suburban rural folks too. So as Romney starts doing better, the energy out there changes better. So the margin that the president's going to lose by in, I don't know, Oklahoma may be higher now, because a lot of those people are coming back into the fray, which is moving the national numbers towards Romney. Because you're not going to move the national numbers towards the president in New York State, because
right.
New York has already has like a 15 to 20 point spread anyway.
Right.
We're
right.
not moving any farther.
And that's why it's so important to look at, you know, you hear these numbers in the polls and so forth, but it's so important to look at the Electoral College and see, okay, well, what does he need to win and what is it looking like now? And I think the number that I heard you say last this morning when we were on the show this morning was, what, about 300 for the president?
Yeah, now, that's technically still a sweep.
Uh-huh.
It's a landslide in Electoral College if you get 300 or more. I say, you know, as just as an analyst, just saying that I believe that he's going to get 300. He's probably already at about 277 already, according to Nate Silver's New York Times blog, where they do like the sports kind of handicapping stuff. But just in a percentage-wise, as far as the aggregated polling and all of that stuff is concerned, the president's about, you know, a 68% chance of winning, 66 to 68, and Mitt Romney's at about a 30 to 33% chance of winning. So they're already aggregating. Even with the battleground states, not even including those, the president is at about 277. I'm sorry. Yeah, he's at 277. You need 270 to win. But if you're at 277 and they're not even counting you know, Nevada and Colorado and Virginia and some of these other battleground states in Florida, if all you have to do is win one, and he's almost at 300.
Now,
so,
That's pretty serious.
Yeah.
That's pretty serious, and that's something that we don't hear the breakdown quite like that. Well, some places, but not quite like that, not hearing 300. I've, you know, watched probably the most liberal media, and they still have him in the twos, you know, definitely winning, but somewhere around 280 or something, and then just and that pendulum keeps flowing back and forth closer to that 267 number that's needed. It's 267, right?
Oh, no, he needs 270.
270, that 270 number that's needed to win. So they, you know, that pendulum keeps flowing back and forth close to that, which has a lot of people in a bit of an uproar. So the thing that has concerned me has been, from the people that I've spoken to, that they have this sense of what do I need to, I don't need to get all excited about that this time. You know, I'll probably make it to the polls. If I don't make it to the polls, whatever. I didn't send money. I didn't do this. I didn't do that. You know, he's probably going to win. I can't believe that he would lose to, people are still saying, I don't believe he could possibly ever lose to a Mormon. You know, they're going there, so they're not feeling any kind of urgency with regards to that. And I just don't want to see people forget or take it, you know, just take it for granted and think that they don't need to go and vote.
Well, I guess the trick to the, all of this is to get them to understand that there is no limit to the dislike for the president. Like, since he was sworn in, there's been people who've been hating him for the whole 4 years. And that's some serious hate, right? To actually maintain the intensity of wanting to dislike somebody so much that you can stay focused for 4 years is crazy. So to say that they won't vote for a Mormon or that he can't believe that he can lose is almost like saying, I can't believe somebody can hate him for 4 years.
Right.
That seems
right.
Unreasonable and irrational, but the fact is that people do that.
Yeah, and that's definitely an ulcer, and they're still going for it. But which also brings me to Tag Romney. You know, I could not let this hour pass without talking about good old Tag. So, for those of you who are listening, of course, Tag Romney is Mitt Romney's son, and recently he was on a news program, and he was questioned about how did he feel when he heard the president call his father a liar. And Jerome, I'm just going to let you take this because you see, I'm breathing hard already.
Well. Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole thing was that he said that he felt like going up and taking a swing at him. But, you know, violence begets violence, right? And so I don't feel sorry for Tag as, you know, people will probably start coming out with hip-hop songs talking about taking a swing at him. Because the problem with this is that the Romney folks didn't come out and say, we're not talking about violence and he didn't apologize, his father didn't apologize, the RNC didn't apologize, but if he was Democrat, they would, if Jay-Z would have said, I feel like taking a swing at Romney, everybody and their mother would have had a fit.
Oh, please. Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding?
Yeah, they would have passed out. But
that would have been all over
the
papers, all over the news, everywhere.
Yep, they tried to play it off like he didn't really say that and he was just playing and all of this and that, but the thing
he
that
really said it, and it
was,
wasn't funny to me.
It wasn't funny because Lawrence O'Donnell on MSNBC actually did a really good job at that, and he said, if you want to come take a swing at somebody, come take a swing at me.
Mm.
He said, wherever you are, I will come to you. Come take a swing at me, right? And so I bet you nobody's going to make a big deal out of that because then they have to admit that he said what he said. And for the record, the president never called his father a liar.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you for reminding me to say that.
And so he can come take a swing at me, too. But the issue is, his father lies. What do you want us to do?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how did you feel about the gentleman telling you about, the president saying that your father is a liar? First of all, okay, he didn't say he was a liar. But how do you feel about your president saying that your father is what your father is, even if he did say it? You know, he didn't say it. He's like, check the transcript.
The transcript.
He said, proceed, Governor, which I really liked. Nobody's really talking about that too much, but I really appreciate it. Oh, my goodness. That was like.
Now, that is a highlight that I am telling you. I am glad you mentioned that because I am telling you that political science class will be teaching for eons because that was a spontaneous moment that the president took control of. History was going to reflect. That's when the president looked in control of everything. When he said, proceed, Governor, he at least gave him the respect to pretty much throw himself into the fire. he pushed him into the fire.
He did. He did. That was, you know, everybody else was saying that they had a different favorite moment. That was my favorite moment of the
That's
going to
be
debate.
Classic. That's a classic moment. Think about it
my
this way, because it, from him saying that in the tone that he said it, it made Mitt Romney more upset.
He stammered. Did you see how he stammered right after that?
Yeah. Because he couldn't believe that he was talking. Like, that was the thing. He was like, I can't believe you talked to me like that. He said, well, did you say it? He said, proceed, Governor. I'm saying, did you say it? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm wrong. Like, how do you get up that energy and end up being just all the way off wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that,
and
that
he says,
well,
I just want the record to reflect, you know. After
that you're wrong. He made such a big deal of creating a record that he put his foot in his mouth. Now, he didn't just put his foot in his mouth. He banked on telling a lie in front of everybody that now we all know that's a lie, even to his face, and he didn't know how to handle it.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Right. So what did the Republicans do? They blamed the moderator for
Candy Crowley, right.
They blamed her for fact, they kept saying for fact check him. She didn't fact check him. She didn't have to go look it up. He said it. So how are you going to blame somebody for telling you the truth?
It was priceless.
It was
priceless.
It was.
I was very happy that she did it. I'm really pleased that the political pundits have, if you will, made it quite clear that that is what she's there for. And I don't see any reason why we should have a debate with the two presidential candidates of the United States and allow one to sit there and say, you know, Mary didn't have a little lamb, she had a big fat dog. You know, and we're like, wait a minute, Mary's had a little lamb.
You know, I think that is one of the most disturbing things for me. So just as a strategist for anybody who's a political science major or anybody who thinks about taking this on as a profession, this needs to be horrifying, or it should be kind of terrifying for the rest of us. Because nobody would actually need a political strategist to give you facts, even on debate prep, if you can lie your way through a campaign season and then keep changing your position. So the Republicans are setting a precedent. If the president does not blow him out in this particular election, the Republicans have found a new method for just rolling with the punches until they say something that you like. And that, my friend, is going to be a problem. So they'll never hire anybody to tell them the truth. They'll just think, I can just say what I want to, and even if you fact-check it and are wrong, so what? I'll get 2 good days in the news cycle. I'll run a quick retraction, and everything will be good.
Yeah, and nobody will hear the retraction. And I think that I'm glad you said it. I'm glad you're saying it this way, because it's important for people to recognize that there have been all kinds of ways that the Republicans have stolen elections, right?
Yeah.
So there was no way for them to steal the last one because of the landslide.
Right.
So now we have, okay, guess what? We had a landslide last time, so we couldn't fix that one. So guess what? Here's what we're going to do. We'll change the voter laws. We'll change the laws and require people to meet standards that likely they won't meet. We will blame the Democrats for voter fraud, and so while everybody's looking at the Democrats and they'll have to change their complete system, then we'll go ahead and start committing voter fraud and throwing red voter registration forms in the garbage and so on and so forth. And then if that, you know, so we'll do all those things, and on top of that, we'll just let our guy lie. Because what are they going to do? We'll just let him lie, because everybody's watching. Those people who are undecided, they'll just get it, and they won't be able to figure out, you know, what's that thing called? Three card Monty? You won't be able to follow the ball.
Yeah. Follow with the money. And, you know, here's the worst part of that, is that not only are you talking about the just general population of minorities not voting, the Republicans are trying to suppress people under 30, because they're voting higher percentage towards President Obama. College students are a big demographic for the Democrats. And even elderly, with as far as what's going on with the Social Security and Medicare. So even if somebody start giving out facts about the $2.7 trillion surplus in Social Security or the changes for Medicare makes Medicare more stable, all of those things, you are losing that those populations as voters. So the Republicans want to suppress those voters just to get more white males in the pool. And the problem is that numerically it's not possible. Even at a, I think they need probably somewhere around 90% of white males' votes to even make it a close race, and they're not that high. They're pretty high, but that is the only area where he's actually polling better than the president, probably at about 60-something percent or 70% in some cases. But he's going to have to do a lot better than that. So the only thing that they can do, they can't get any more white men vote. They're saying, okay, well, let's try to suppress the minorities, the females, the older folks, because they don't care if older folks don't have ID to vote either.
Right.
Because they roll, sorry, that was sarcastic. They put the voting machines in nursing homes. So if you're already a resident, they're not going to vote photo ID check them.
Right.
Right? And so you can still get the elderly who are in fixed locations to vote. So
yeah.
What Mitt Romney did is generally is that he just keeps lying so that if you hear something that you like, you'll be able to hang your hat on it, and then he'll change it for another crowd, and then he'll change it for another crowd. But like I said, this is a bad precedent for our political system, because if this remotely works a little bit, he's going to have no politicians ever going to tell you the truth again. So since we're all cynical about politics, you think politicians lie now, let Mitt Romney come close in this race. It'll be he'll be the poster child for if Mitt Romney did it, I don't have to tell the truth.
That's right. That's right. Every race, not just presidential. And
not
so
right.
it looks like that what's potentially happening is that they actually, even before the president coined the phrase Romneysia, they actually were trying to have so many people in America catch it. So that, okay, well, Romney
right.
over here is going to say this, and then if you're not keeping up with him, or you can forget what he said 4 years ago or 4 years before that or even just last month, then you'll think that, oh, well, maybe he really always was for, you know, X or Y or whatever. Pick any topic. So, you know, people
are – doing that, I can tell you what their policy has been on this. What the Republicans have done opposed to having an agenda, like there's no jobs bill. So they got elected in 2010 saying jobs, 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 but they never put up not one jobs bill in 2 years. So what the Republicans have cleverly done, and even though they have a 7% approval rating in Congress, what they've done is they learn how to distract. So they'll say stuff like, we need to see the president's plan. How come he doesn't have a plan? And you know why? They need to copy his homework. So they need him to give them a plan so they can say, oh, we don't like this, we don't like this, and we don't like this. It's meant to distract you. So
mm-hmm.
Mitt Romney doesn't have a plan. All he can do is critique the president's plan and tell you what he doesn't like about this, or we would do something different. But they don't have a plan on their side because they don't know what to say to you.
Right, and that brings me right to, which was kind of, it wasn't funny, but it was kind of funny to me that, you know, the president kept saying to him, he's like, you keep saying that you're going to do this, but I've already done that, so were you just going to, like, copy everything that I already did that worked?
and that's classic, right? Because what happens is that something that's working, he's trying to make you think that he has balance by saying, oh, yeah, I was going to keep the same thing, right? And I can tell you there's a Tea Party candidate in this area, and they weren't really Tea Party to begin with, but they bought into that agenda when they won in 2010. And out of all the negative campaign ads for Congress in this area, over the last week, the Tea Party candidate ran a commercial saying, I've worked with the president as an advisor at the UN, on behalf of President Obama. This is a Tea Party person. And this is going on in a lot of Tea Party races, and that's because it's not working.
Right.
You can't go back to Congress running on an agenda saying we need to stop this country from moving forward. That's not working anymore. So now they have to act in the last week like they were actually helping the president.
Right, all along.
So that's why Romney's doing that. That's why he's saying, "Oh, our policies are not very different from each other. Just choose me."
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So why should we choose you when you have to get completely caught up? And first of all, we know you're lying, right? First of all, you're lying.
Let's just say that right up front.
You are lying. And even if you were telling the truth, why should we snatch something from somebody who's doing an incredible job so that you can go in there and try and copy it? Why do I want the facsimile when I can have the real thing? Come on.
Right. And we all know that they have no really good intention either. That's a whole different story, that the Republicans have no good intentions of doing anything that's substantial for the American people, right? You can't say we want more jobs, and the way to more jobs is more tax cuts. Because if you're not working and don't pay taxes, tax cuts are not going to help you.
Absolutely right. That's absolutely right. So, Jerome, thank you so much. Before we end up, I'd love for you to say what you think is going to be what the president needs to accomplish tomorrow night. My opinion is, you just got to show up, have on a suit.
I'm one of those people that I'm just not cynical enough to believe that the president needs to do anything. There's always this thing about all he probably should do is do what he does. When you're better, you just have to play your game. It's the reason why in horse races that they have the little blinders on the horse, running your lane so that you don't have to look at that other guy.
Stay in your lane. Absolutely classic. I agree with you 100%. So on that note, I want to thank you so much for this impromptu program on the election, what's coming up now, what you can expect to look for as you decide who to vote for or make sure that you vote. And also, for the last thing before we close out, just know that you can vote right away. And Jerome, you know this better than me, so I'm just going to punt this to you as we close.
Yes, you can always ask for absentee ballot, ask for them to get mailed out. I know, I think in New York State, I think you can do it till tomorrow. I'm not sure. Every county is kind of different, but you can ask for absentee ballot. You can actually go in and fill out your ballot right there and give it to them. You don't have to wait till Election Day to vote. Get an absentee ballot if you don't think that you can make it on Election Day, or you think the lines are going to be too long or whatever. Just get it in now, and you don't even have to worry about it.
Yeah, go down to the Board of Elections. If you happen to be in New York, you can just look it up online, find out where the Board of Elections is in your borough. If you are in the borough of Queens, it's on Queens Boulevard. It's very easy to get to. Just head right over there, go inside, let them know you want to vote, and you can cast your vote right away, which I am actually going to do prayerfully tomorrow, if not definitely this week. So, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you so much for listening. You are listening to Ask Kathleen on ACN, and it has been an incredible pleasure to talk with you tonight, Jerome, our political strategist extraordinaire. About what's coming up in the election. Make sure you watch the debate tomorrow night. If you miss it, you can always catch it online, and we'll be talking. Jerome and I will be back one night. We'll let you know to talk about how the debate went, and you'll be able to talk about what you thought with regards to how the president did, how Mitt Romney did, and what that means for you. Definitely tomorrow you want to listen to Black on Black Crime at 2 p.m. with none other than our own Jerome Esprit and Finesse, and they will be talking about Black on Black Crime. And Jerome, describe that.
Oh, no. Black on black crime is when black people overtly focus, criticize, or analyze black people in areas that they won't criticize or analyze or focus on anybody else. So we take a bunch of different topics and kind of call people out who are committing black on black crimes.
And it's awesome. It is really a great show. Very thoughtful, very humorous, while being extremely intelligent. And I get to participate as the commissioner and throw flags. So as like my favorite role.
No flags from the commissioner.
So join us tomorrow at 2 p.m. right here on Ask Kathleen Network at for Black on Black Crime. You can call in 909-265-9189. And we'll be back next week Sunday with a huge surprise for you. We have a new programming coming up over here on ACN. So stay with us, stay tuned, stay close, and have an incredible week. We look forward to hearing from you. You can hit me up on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter, and let me know how things are going in your life. So have a great evening, everybody. This has been Ask Kathleen, and we are checking out right now. Thanks again, Jerome.
All right, thank you.
Good night, everybody.
I'm checking your smile, working your back like it's going out of style. Shake just a little bit faster, shake just a little now, girl. I'm dying to meet you, so let's mess around. Got an obsession, so us getting down. Come just a little bit closer, I just need permission, so
give me a green light.
Oh, that's the ticket. I hope you're more like Anita Baker than Robin Givens. No, I-